Hey, let's take your calls, your questions, your stories. Maybe you've lived in a haunted house. Share it with Stephen Williams when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, along with Stephen Williams, Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue Team. Their websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Their Facebook is as well. Stephen, how do you know you've been successful? What's the hit that when you're at a place and you know you did what you're supposed to do?
Okay, the final thing that we do is a clearing, energetic clearing, and that's the vibrational technique that I've developed over the years. And I use a tuning fork that's tuned to a certain frequency and a rose quartz crystal, which acts as an amplifier. So that's the final step. And once we do that, we always invite the homeowner to go back through the location with us to see, you know, how they feel about things, if it feels different to them. And typically, it always does. And even we get reports that when they bring their children back in, because we don't allow children there while we're doing this.
You do not. How come? Why is that? And I like that, but how come?
Yeah, it's unpredictable. I mean, you don't know when you're dealing with an earthbound spirit that's agitated. You don't know what they're going to do, and they might produce some kind of physical phenomenon or throw something.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, push someone. So you don't want children to be around that.
And those things have happened, right?
They can. They absolutely can, yeah. And so we've never allowed children to be present during any investigations that we've ever done, and I've ever done in 18 years. But a lot of times the homeowners will always follow up about 2 weeks afterwards, because I like to give it time to kind of, you know, settle down. And they know over a two-week period that things have ceased to occur there. But they often report that their children even say that things feel differently, and you know they're not as frightened or anything like that. And in fact, they're not frightened after that. So, yeah, we always follow up. And the only time we've ever had to go back to any house in the past year and a half that I've been working with Kayla and Jennifer is one house was so far away from Memphis. It was such a long travel distance that we ran out of time the first time we went there, and there were so many spirits there. So we had to go back a second time and work with the few that were still left when we had to leave the first time. And the second house we had to go back to was a house where we had done our clearing work and rescue work. And the young lady was very intuitive. And so she contacted us and said, I'm still having some activity, which really surprised me, because that's something we never hear. And so we went back, and what had happened was she had attracted two child spirits into her home, brother and sister. And so we helped them to transition, and then we spent a lot of time with her that night trying to explain to her how to work with her guests and to avoid having spirits, you know, come home with her like that. So a lot of it's also counseling the homeowners, especially if someone's opening up to their gifts.
Does it ever get emotional for the group or for the individual who owns the house after you've done these things, the cleansings and things like that?
Absolutely. There was one house we went to in Jackson, Tennessee, and the gentleman there, he's a very intuitive person, and he had kind of developed a bonding relationship with a child spirit who was in the house. And this little girl is pretty amazing. Her name was Lily, and she actually, at the end of our investigation, she dropped a penny out of midair onto Kayla's lap.
Wow.
That was an apport. Yeah, we all saw that. But he told us a story about when he had told some of his friends about what was going on in the house and everything, so he got a phone call. He answered his phone. It was a little girl's voice, and she said, hello, and he said, well, who is this? And she said, we're the children who live in your house.
Oh, a phone call?
Yes.
I love that.
And so he thought maybe his friends were pranking him, because he had told them
about
the activity in the house. So he's alone in the house, okay? So he goes into an interior closet. This is at night, and it's dark in there, of course, and he holds up three fingers, and he says, what am I doing now? And she said, you're holding up three fingers.
Wow.
So that little girl, she was quite amazing. And we actually...
I love that story.
That was the house that we had to go back to, because we didn't have time to work with her the first time we went there. But the second time she did cross over.
Do you ever have to get spiritual? Do you have to invoke the name of Jesus or anything like that?
No. You're not really.
You're not like an exorcist, right?
No. We're not banishers. We're rescuers. So we're kind of opposite of that. Now, if we do encounter a malevolent spirit or an inhuman spirit, we also we have allies on the other side that we can call in. They deal with that type of thing. And so we just automatically call on them. They carry them away. I've had a couple of instances where human spirits have tried to interfere with crossings. And I've called on those allies, and they actually have come in and taken them away. People had witnessed that at a workshop I was doing one time. Saw this bright light coming down the hallway after I invoked that energy. So, yeah, we have allies that help us out with those types of things.
Did you ever meet a spirit you didn't like?
Oh, yeah. I mean, do you ever meet people you don't like?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of personalities. In fact, I'm writing a book right now. I'm writing a guidebook for intuitive paranormal investigators and ghost hunters that would like to explore this concept of spirit rescue. I hope more people will take note of this and maybe think about doing this type of work rather than, just pure investigation.
When might that book be done? I want you back.
Okay. I'm about halfway finished with it. Actually, the COVID thing gave me some opportunity at my home here to start working on that back in March. So I'm about halfway finished.
All right. Well, keep in touch. Keep in touch with our team.
Okay. I will. Yeah, it's going to have all the techniques that I've learned from different mediums over the past 13 years and also some my trial and error things that I've learned. And then we'll talk about all the different spirit personality types that we've run across and how to work with them. So it should be a helpful book to people who want to get involved in spirit rescue.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Kim, truck driving in Mississippi. Welcome to the program, Kim. Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hello.
It's a great thing what you're doing, Steve, and I think it's awesome.
Thank you.
I've got a spirit. I don't know if she's still around. We've had a handful of experiences with her. She's not bad. It's my late good friend's grandmother. She's buried up on top of the hill. We bought the family farm from my friend's family. And so over the past 20 years, there's been a number of different things. And the most amazing thing that she did was she and my dog at one point didn't get along. My dog would get scared and hide under the bed. We drive truck, you know, we'd come home and we wouldn't be home very long. So she had run of the house while we were gone. So when we come home, then the dog would get scared, hide under the bed, scared to death. And I would tell her, you know, you two have to cohabitate together. I says, you're going to have to get along. And a few seconds later, then the dog would come out. And one time we came home, and they were, like, playing together. I took a video of it. He was dancing around like somebody was holding a biscuit or something, and he would, like, he was up on his hind legs just dancing around, went from the bedroom to the living room. And I called my husband, and I'm like, come here and look, and I'm videotaping it with my phone. And he's like, wow. I mean, it was crazy. But I haven't seen her. My dog passed away 5 years ago. He got cancer, and I haven't had anything. But now, I never speak of her when I'm home, except for when I would tell her she's going to have to get along with the dog. But it's like out of sight, out of mind, maybe. I don't know if she's crossed over since my dear friend has passed away. I don't know.
She could, you know, she could have already made the transition. Do you ever find pennies? Or feathers.
I find pennies and dimes every day.
Okay, that could be her because a lot of times they will bring those gifts.
I find them every day. I take a picture of it before I pick it up. I'll get out of the truck on the fuel island. There won't be anything on the ground when I get my fuel. I'll go in. I'll come back. There'll be a penny right there at the step of my truck. I mean, it happens all the time.
Well, I collect them. I've got
handfuls.
Yeah, I tell my clients who find those types of gifts to get a special jar or container to put them in and put them up on the mantle or on a special shelf in the house.
Why don't they leave little chips of gold, huh?
Well, you know, they never do. They never leave gold coins. It's always pennies or dimes or nickels. I don't know. But I tell you what, look at the dates on those coins, because sometimes they will.
That's something.
Guy up in Jackson with a little girl that called him on the phone, he finds pennies with his birthday on him all the time. So I'm sure that's her.
Well, and the dates may have some significance to the spirit, right?
Right, right.
Interesting take. Next up, Joe in Monterey, California on the Wild Card line. Hey, Joe.
Hey, thank you, George.
Thank you.
I've been listening to you, and for 18 years, you have grown quite a bit. You're very good at what you do. I read your site. He has a good site and describes a lot of things. I've been doing healing work for like 26 years, and one of the things we do as a healer is exorcism. My friend and I also used to do paranormal investigation.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we don't banish them. We're very advanced in what we do. We don't banish them. We bring them into the light, or we get the appropriate angels or whatever help that we can to help them into the light, because we feel that they're just lost souls. There are some really bad things out there, though. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, your work, and you've seen this, and you have a really good finger on the pulse. TV and movies, how do they portray what you do? And how do you feel how accurate they are, and what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, there's really not any movies out there about spirit rescue. I guess maybe Ghost, it probably comes the closest as to someone trying to, make someone aware that they're there and to ask for help. That's probably a pretty good depiction of that. I think also The Others, that Nicole Kidman movie, where the protagonists there in the movie are actually the spirits. And that's not revealed until the end, because I think a lot of times when people move into homes, the spirits that are already there are frightened, and confused about why someone's in their space. So I think that's a pretty good depiction of what actually occurs too.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Joe's a good investigator. Next up, we go to Joe in Elton, Maryland. Welcome to the program. Hey, Joe, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, Mr. George, and hi, Mr. Steve. Mr. Steve, I got a question for you. You say you don't say any more prayers for protection when you go into the people's homes. Now, aren't you worried about attachments coming to you? Because even if, like, you have salt or prayers of protection around your entranceways, a malevolent spirit or a demon can still attach to you. And they can pass through your protection, through your aura, and get into your home. And then they can wreak havoc in your home and on you. So I know you have, certain entities you call on for protection, but you leave yourself open to that. And, like, when you're asleep, they can come and attack you in your dreams when you're most vulnerable.
Well, what do you think, Stephen?
If you keep your vibration high, everything to me is energy. It's at a certain frequency and a certain vibration. And in my experience, when your vibration is at a high level, those low-level or negative-type energies cannot even get close to you. So we don't ever worry about that. When we go into a location, we know that we're protected. We have our vibration high. And like attracts light, because there are people, in Memphis here and wherever you are that are involved in some, very terrible activities tonight, and they attract those energies to them. So they're the ones that are going to be having those types of problems. It's not going to be someone whose intent is good and who keeps their vibration high, in my experience.
Absolutely. Next up, let's go to Joe in... Well, let's go to Lynn in Vancouver, Canada. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks, George.
Sure.
For taking my call. And Stephen, I like the previous, I think her name was Kim. Thank you for doing this, because my story is, it's the first time that I've ever told this story. It's almost 40 years old. And it occurred when I was a university student and lived in a very, very old house that had... weirdly enough, been brought over from Germany brick by brick, and it was almost 100 years old. The basement was very rough-hewn rock. You know how they did that. They didn't finish it or anything. And that's where, and it, by the time I moved in, there was 9 apartments. And there was, it was almost like a house of Usher. There was all these different floors, and there's little alcoves where the apartments would start. So it was a very cool, historic building. I met when I moved in, of course, you start meeting the neighbors. Everybody was pretty much to themselves, but, you know, cordial, friendly when necessary, blah, blah, blah. The laundry room was in the basement, and it was one of those horrible, too many movies as a kid, but, you know, it had the bare bulb from the ceiling. And what had happened was soon after I moved in, this really nice, very quiet couple who lived in one of the apartments had been in a car accident, and both had died instantly. So that was before the Christmas. And when I came back in January, because you go away for the break and then come back for the rest of the term, January through April, when I was down in the laundry room, one of those first nights back in January, I heard noise. And, you know, at first you wonder if it's another tenant coming down to do the laundry, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you sort of freeze and you listen, nothing. And I kind of shrugged it off. You know, I thought, oh, maybe there's an animal or something in the basement. Didn't think anything of it. Next time I did laundry, same thing happened. Again, not an intrusive noise, but a noise enough that you would go, hey, what's that? You know, because you're a single woman in a building, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it happened a couple of more times, and I came to the conclusion, and I was very young at the time and was not going to tell a single soul about this, that I always felt that because it was the couple's home and that they were on the way home when they were in this horrible accident, that this is where they chose to, I guess, you know, sort of rest in between worlds, because and I always thought it would be the woman of the couple that was, you know, in the laundry room, and that they were both very quiet, lovely people. So I always, you know, she didn't want to scare me, but yet, you know, she was probably the one that did the laundry. So that's my story. That's the first time I've ever told the story, because it still kind of gives me the chills to this very day.
Interesting take on that. Why do people get scared, Stephen?
Why do people get scared?
Yeah.
It's just the fear of the unknown. I think the more you understand about this, and the more you realize
it's a great story.
The world around us, yeah, you just, that fear dissipates. I can walk into any location and feel comfortable. So
you don't get the willies anymore, do you?
No, I feel their energy. So the way that my spirit guides have mapped out my clairsentience is I feel masculine on the right side, I feel feminine on the left side. And I feel earthbound spirits around my crown chakra, around my ear level. I feel the guides and angelics closer to the top. Now, if I feel it going down the back of my neck, I know that that's the negative, darker energies. So I have a kind of an early warning system. Anytime I walk into a place, I can really read it, the energy, quite accurately.
All right, Stephen, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Dr. Doom joins us, Ed Dames, as we're going to be talking about Kim Jong-un from North Korea. Ed's done a little remote viewing. He's going to tell us what's going on with that guy. And then Trapper Jack joins us. You might remember him if you live in the Cleveland area as the longtime Morning Drive radio host. He'll be talking to us about synchronicities on Coast to Coast. And welcome back, Stephen Williams with us. Stephen, how many places to investigate or to rescue do you have on the charts?
We have an investigation coming up Friday night and Sunday night and the following Friday night. So we have 3 scheduled already, and another person who's contacted us that we're trying to get her into. So we'll be wearing masks during
That's
all this
right.
COVID thing, but we still get out there and get in the field.
How long generally do these investigations last?
You know, in the beginning,
I would be in locations for 4 and 5 hours sometimes in the wee hours of the morning, and now we're in and out within an hour or two. So we get in pretty quickly and establish communications, do our counseling work, and then do the clearing work at the end. So normally we're out of there within 2 hours. So we do it from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Friday nights and Sunday nights.
Ever been in a place that you said, I am so glad I'm out of there?
Yeah, but it's not because of the spirits. It's because of the people. Sometimes you come across some people that are even
scarier than the spirits, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been in situations where as soon as I walked in the door, it's like, this doesn't feel right. Not quite as bad as the guy who came to the door in the diaper, but, you know, you get into a house and you just don't feel comfortable.
Well, if he came to the door in a diaper and a pacifier, I would have run to get out of there, right?
I just didn't go in that house. I knew that was not right, so...
And what do you do when you're done? When you leave the place, do you write up a report? How do you handle it?
Yeah, on the website, we always put a synopsis of what's occurred there. I never identify our clients by name. So if I came to your house and you live in a certain city, I would just say George of that city in that state.
Okay.
So we never identify our clients because they want their confidentiality. That's important. And we always like I said, contact them within a couple of weeks and do a follow-up, make sure everything's okay. And a lot of times they will want to send us a little testimonial or a short paragraph or two, so we like to include that on our website so that people know that we can provide that kind of help to others.
How much do your services cost?
Zero.
Zero?
Never taken a penny in 18 years for this. No, to me, it's really sacred. I mean, you're working with souls. Okay.
What are you living on?
Well, I work two jobs.
Oh, okay.
I'm a graphic designer by day, and I'm a massage therapist and energy worker, I guess you'd say. That's part of my massage service, but I do that in the evenings and the weekends.
You may be the only ghost investigators who don't charge.
Oh, really?
I would think so.
It's really sacred work to us, and it's service work, so we feel like we're...
Good for you.
Back to people, yeah.
Good for you.
Now, people do try to pay us, and when they do, I ask them if they want to show their gratitude, they can make a donation to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital.
Good for you.
Memphis.
Super.
That's our favorite charity.
I've got a friend who's on the board of that hospital.
Yeah, it's wonderful. They're trying to find a cure for childhood cancer there.
Have you ever brought a spirit home with you unintentionally?
I have. No, actually it was intentionally. I was in St. Augustine, Florida, and there was a child spirit there that I knew.
At the lighthouse? Were you at the lighthouse?
No, it was at the St. Francis Inn. That's the oldest inn there in St. Augustine. And there was a child there that liked cats. So I said that she could come home with me and see my cats, and she came for about a day. And I was able to work with her and help her transition. So I knew that that would be, you know, a helpful thing for her. But no, typically our guides keep them out of our homes. In fact, Kayla and Jennifer, they visualize that there's a business closed sign, and they pull the blinds down so they don't have spirits coming in their homes all the time.
All right, well, let's wrap up this half hour by taking calls. Jackie in Rayland, Ohio, east of the Rockies, to get us started. Hi, Jackie.
Hello.
Good to have you with us.
Hello.
Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
There you go for it.
I can feel spirits that have crossed over, but not earthbound ghosts. I have communicated with them with yes, no questions. However, I want to develop communication, a better way of doing it, so I could provide reassurance for their loved ones and messages for their loved ones. More that I can do that can help me communicate with them.
What kind of tips would you give her?
I would say try to find a class or a teacher in your area who offers psychic and mediumship development classes.
and do that. And then also, what opened me up to being able to feel energy and to also communicate better was to become attuned in Usui Reiki. Because once you, Reiki opened me up to feeling energy, and it actually, I'm an energy channel because of that. When I do my massages, I always end up with energy work at the end, and I invite the client's loved ones to come in and their guides to come in, and they pour the energy through me. So a lot of times I'll get messages during that part of that session. But I would say, yeah, try to find somewhere in your area where you can experience Reiki if you've never experienced that. And then a lot of people are teach that or attune people to be able to feel the energy and channel the energy.
Have you ever had a spirit, Stephen, that thanked you for what you do?
Yeah, the lady that came back after we helped her, helped her cross over, and she took her son with her at that point. So.
Betsy's in Mississippi. Take it away, Betsy.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Great
there.
Voice. Love your voice. Oh. Good evening, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
Hello, Betsy.
This is a long time ago. It was approximately the time that Splash Casino opened in Robinsonville near Memphis. We had gone out to celebrate there and then went on up to Memphis to have pasta dinner at a well-known restaurant. Left there and we're coming back and a light mist. Got right along I-55, headed south, somewhere near Batesville. And we were chatting. We had a couple in the back seat chatting up, what we're going to do next and so forth. And all of a sudden, I saw a man standing out. My husband and I saw a man standing out in the middle of the southbound lane of I-55 with his hands up like hands up, don't shoot.
Oh, jeez.
And I said, oh, my God, stop. And he hit the brake right around the same time I said that. And when I did, this spirit, this thing, whatever it was, it looked like a man. And during that time period, Billy Ray Cyrus was very popular. And this visible but almost translucent image was of a man like with the jeans and with a flannel plaid like shirt with his hands up
like Billy Ray would dress.
Yes, that's why it stuck with me. When someone asked me, can you describe him, that's what it was. And so it was just so shocking, and the couple in the back seat were asleep, so they were oblivious to it, but my husband and I both saw it at the same time. And when we hit the brakes just before impacting whatever this was, it went up over like a mist, just went up over the top of the car. We were so freaked out by it. We went maybe, I don't know, less than a quarter of a mile on down, we saw lights. And there was a white car, and this was in 1992, right around November 1st, somewhere around that time. And there was a white car over in the median. It appeared as though it had been traveling north on I-55, and the ambulance was there, and we had just gone through this thing, and I was just panicked, about that, and then I saw this wreck. But it did not occur to me until after we got through there that that could have been the spirit of whoever was
in that car crash.
That car.
Yep. Absolutely.
And so I've wondered all these years, 28 years or so now, if this would fit the description of any apparently young-looking man between 20 and 30 or so years old that would dress like that, that had a wreck on I-55 near Batesville, Mississippi. And, I never could find out. But that was the most, and I was a real skeptic, trust me. All due respect to you, Stephen. I'm, until I have someone do that. Maybe he followed us home because we've had some bad luck since then. But at any rate, that was the most hair-raising thing either of us have ever experienced. Not again and not before. But I thought you might find that interesting.
Stephen, that's conceivable that that was the victim, wasn't it?
It's very, very likely it was. And I've had spirits get in the car with me as I'm driving down the road. And we had one when Jennifer and Kayla and I were traveling over to help a family over in East Tennessee. We don't normally travel that far, but the children were being terrorized by spirits.
we actually had a gentleman get in the car with us as we were crossing the Tennessee River going about 70 miles an hour on 940. And he was someone from post-World War II because he was dressed in a paratrooper's jacket. And he was searching for his mother. So we were able to actually counsel him in the car traveling down the interstate. And we did a crossing right there. So they will be attracted to people who can perceive them.
How physical do they look? I mean, solid?
Yeah, the little girl that I saw in the house, she looks like just a regular person. And I've also seen, and of course, the apparition that was in that wheelchair definitely looked real. And I've also seen a young lady in an antebellum home near Memphis, and she was dressed in a hoop skirt. And you could see the colors in her dress perfectly. It was burgundy and gold and sparkly, but you could partially see through her. But she was very detailed. I mean, you could see she had her hair up in a bun. She had a little pin thing in it. And I jumped up, ran out in the hallway, and she had vanished. So she gave us a little look at what she, in her prime, probably what she looked like.
Let's go to Hal in Midland, Texas. First-time caller for Hal. Welcome to the program, Hal.
Hey, Stephen, George, long-time listener back in Art Bell's days.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, listen, got Alzheimer's question. Somebody elderly with Alzheimer's, are they confused on the transition?
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think when any whatever state of mind the person's in when they transition, when they get to the end of their corporeal existence, many times they get stuck in that condition. So if they're, if a person's angry or if they're if they've committed suicide and they're remorseful, they still carry those emotions with them. So I think it's very possible that people in that condition of dementia, they need some healing. And if they don't transition immediately, if someone's not there to take them over, they might get stuck in that for a while.
Stephen, I notice you don't use the word died. You say transition.
No.
That's interesting.
Yes. Yeah, it's a journey. The way I look at it, it's a journey, and it never ends. So, I believe that we have many lifetimes. We come here to learn lessons. And the spirits that have come back and talked to us and told us a little bit about what's coming up, it seems like a really wonderful experience where you can pretty much create your own reality. And my dad, actually, both my parents transitioned a couple of years ago, and I have a medium friend here in Memphis named Sheila, and she did a reading, and my dad came through, and he told her he was studying architecture.
On the other side? Really?
Yeah, all kinds of opportunities. Now, he never went to college. He grew up on a farm, and he had a high school education, but anything that he could imagine, he was very mechanically inclined, he could build it. And so that made perfect sense to me. She didn't know anything about my father, so that, that was some relevant information and validation for me.
If you see any architectural changes to clouds, you know what he's doing, right?
Probably, yeah.
I love it. Stephen, what do you recommend to people who think they have a haunted place that they're living in? Some of them are scared, some of them are not, but what do they do?
Well, I think you need to try to find someone reputable in your area that, has some experience. There are a lot of people who watch these shows on TV, and they'll put together a little group and, promote it on Facebook. But look for people who are very experienced, who, been in this field for quite a while. And then look at their case studies and also their websites and make sure it's a positive type presentation. There's a lot of these groups that will put little scary things on their
just to pull you in.
Yeah, to pull you in. So, you can read the energy. Anybody can read the energy of a program or a website. So just pay attention to that. And there's also a great magazine called Paranormal Underground that's produced over in East Tennessee, and they have worked with a lot of different groups across the country. So if anybody's looking for recommendations, I would refer them to Paranormal
Underground.
Super.
And Stephen, let us know when the next book is done. We'll get you back on. Stephen Williams Website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Timothy Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borrows, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.